I was 26 years old when I started out as a pastor. Yet I didn't know the Bible that well. I had read parts of it and some New Testament letters, but I never read it from cover to cover. And then at a men's breakfast, a wise pastor and professor named Willie Muller mentioned that he had been through his Bible 10 times by the time he was 17. And I immediately knew this would be an area of growth for me. So I began to read more earnestly, more intentionally. And one section of the Bible constantly bothered me. 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings. This was a time or section of the Bible that describes the establishment of the nation of Israel from the time of the judges to the time of the kings. And I noticed that so many of the leaders of that time, either judges or kings, started out well, but then finished poorly. Like Saul, who meditated on the word of the Lord when he was younger, but as king wandered far from the Lord, and at the end of his life, consulted a medium for guidance. Or Solomon, who started humbly, asking for the Lord's wisdom, yet he allowed his heart to wander far from the Lord. And his unfaithfulness set the stage for the breakup of Israel. And we continue to see this today. Christian leaders who start out well and finish poorly. And we also see this in the lives of Christians outside of the ministry. Some Christian couples married for decades get divorced after their kids are gone. Or Christians who walked with God for many years deconstruct their faith. And if you had asked them in their 20s or their 30s, if this is where they would end up, they would have been horrified. Now, no leader or Christian in God's kingdom will ever be perfect. We all fall short, and only Jesus fulfilled his role perfectly. Yet, some have finished well in history and in our world today. And we can learn much from them about key factors to prepare for finishing well. So today I want to share with you some discoveries about this topic from my sabbatical this past summer. And if you're a young adult or a person 30 years of age or under, you might think this has absolutely nothing to do with you because you're just starting out on your adult life. But you can learn about pitfalls to avoid that can hinder your finishing well in the future. Or you may find yourself in a situation that you didn't dream about 10 or 20 years ago. Things have not turned out as you imagined. And you wonder, is there really purpose in trying to put the pieces together and moving forward? Well, the gospel message of grace and new beginnings continually brings refreshment to our lives and refreshes our lives. God is not done with you yet. He has much for you to do in the years that you have before you. And some of you may be very near the end of your earthly life. You are near finishing, yet our lives do not end until our very last breath. And I pray that God will use this time to encourage you to keep going on his calling for your life until he calls you home. Now, this journey of study towards some answers led to some interesting places and conversations. I surveyed pastors with at least 30 years of ministry experience. They served in a variety of churches and places in a variety of size of church. I also read on the topic of finishing well from a ministry perspective, from a life perspective, and reflected on the life of King David's later years. And from these studies, three questions arose. The first one, why do some finish poorly? How could David, for example, with all his success and love for God, end up making critical errors in the latter half of his life that caused much suffering for him, his family, and the nation? So what factors may combine to push us onto the path of finishing poorly? Second, we must consider our own belief about retirement. Our culture tells us that retirement is all about enjoying 20 to 30 years of leisure, travel, and recreation. Have we bought into this idea? And is it good for us and honoring to God? And with these first two in mind, we can then ask the question, what is necessary to prepare for finishing well? What do we need to learn, and where might we need to refocus? And by the end of our time together today, I pray that you will have some tools and perspective that can contribute to your finishing well in the eyes of God. There are going to be copies of this entire paper that I wrote at the Info Center for you following the worship service if you're interested. So you don't have to worry about getting tons of notes down at this time if you want to do that. But know that that and an expansion on all the things that I'll be talking about today is available for you at the Info Center. But we're going to start today in 2 Samuel chapter 11 in the latter part of King David's life. And this introduces us into this question, why do some finish poorly? Well, King David had it all at this point in his life. If there was ever a model for success in the Old Testament, it was David. He faithfully guarded his father's sheep as a young man, and this included killing a lion and a bear that threatened the sheep. Then he takes on the mammoth giant Goliath in a battle that is now world famous and part of our everyday culture. Everyone knows what we're talking about when we mention a David and Goliath scenario. It's the smaller, defeating the apparently stronger. So David defeats Goliath from his shepherding experience and by the strength of the Lord. And so Israel's king Saul brings him immediately into the army. And wherever David goes and whatever he does, he succeeds. David also possesses great musical skill and poetic writing ability. At least half of the Psalms in the Bible are written by David. David marries the king's daughter. He succeeds at most everything he tries. He eventually reigns over the 12 tribes of Israel. And then he defeats and pacifies Israel's mortal enemies. He accumulates wives and possessions, and so by his early 40s, he has reached the top, both figuratively and literally. He lives at the top of Jerusalem in his royal house, and he has set up a golden age for Israel. Surely, things could only get better from here. But then we arrive at 2 Samuel 11, verse 1. In the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they ravaged the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained in Jerusalem. And the narrator sets this up brilliantly. In the time when kings go out to battle, David, the king, remained in Jerusalem. What are you doing there, David? Why are you not out with your army? Surely there has to be a good reason. Maybe some important diplomacy needed attention. Maybe he felt he could best coordinate this campaign from the capital. However, the narrator quickly reveals nothing important is going on in Jerusalem. Look at David's activities in verse 2. It happened late one afternoon when David arose from his couch and was walking on the roof of the king's house. So David is laying down on his couch and he's walking around on his roof. Do those sound like critical kingdom-leading activities? No. And the next events confirm David's idleness. He saw from the roof a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful. So David is not focused on the battle. Maybe he's bored. He gets the palace to find out who she is, then has her sent to the palace, and he lays with her. And from here, things spiral for David. She becomes pregnant. He tries to cover it up. He orders her husband exposed in the battlefield. Archers strike him down dead. And after completing her time of mourning, David immediately takes her as his wife, even though he already has several wives. To his credit, David repents when confronted by the prophet Nathan. Yet the child conceived will die, and the sword will never leave David's household. He will also suffer the shameful humiliation of open rebellion led by his own son. So how does one so successful end up there? How does a man, after God's own heart, drift so far from God? Well, David didn't wake up one day and say to himself, you know, I think I'm going to make some decisions today that are going to bring shame, hardship, and tragedy on myself, my family, and the nation. No. Several factors likely combined to lead in this direction. And the pastors I corresponded with mentioned a few that they had experienced or observed. So why or what can lead to finishing poorly? What are some of the factors? Well, one is lack of strength, physical or emotional. One wrote, I regularly face the temptation to coast because during my last few years of ministry, I was just tired, both physically and emotionally. Another wrote, in my experience, the temptation to coast emerges in the midst of fatigue and discouragement, where the desire and energy to persevere or take initiative is eclipsed by the need to cope and to keep up. So physical or lack of physical strength is one potential cause. Near burnout, of course, makes us vulnerable even more. And in response to the question, were you ever tempted to coast? Another wrote, absolutely. Much of it brought on by living on the edge of burnout. It robs one of the emotional energy needed to minister to people and shrinks time focus down to a week at a time. Long-term visioning is not only impossible because you lack the capacity, it seems ridiculous to plan for a future when you can barely manage the present. Unresolved conflict or difficult issues can also contribute to coasting. One pastor wrote, the difficulty of confronting some things that needed to change contributed to coasting. I couldn't see a way forward. And when our work involves the grind of some unresolved conflict or some issue that constantly drains us, we can lose our passion. A poor fit can also generate a loss of passion. If we are in a position or role in life that does not fit with our strengths and passions, we can constantly struggle. Bob Buford in his book writes, every game, and by game he means job or role, has its own rules, and you don't get to make them up. You choose your game and adapt to its rules, but if you find that the rules chafe, restrict, and don't allow expression of your potential, you either need to change games or create your own. And if our position or role in life does not align with our core gifting, we can lose focus and purpose. And I wonder if this is what happened to David. He seemed to thrive out in the field, tending sheep, fighting battles, going on military campaigns. He creatively produced songs and poetry. Maybe palace and kingdom administration did not suit him at all. Maybe he thought he had to run everything from the palace now that he had reached the top, and such a role may have poorly fit David's strengths and abilities. Deep disappointment may also play a role. In their book, Finishing Well in Life and Ministry, Bill Mills and Craig Parrow point out that there are three types of disappointment that have the potential to derail us. One is disappointment with God. They note how the prophet Habakkuk could not understand why God tolerated the wickedness of the nation. And then when God announced that he would deal with the wickedness of the nation by using the more wicked nation, Babylon, to do it, Habakkuk becomes even more disappointed with God. Next comes disappointment with ourselves. Peter faced major disappointment with himself because of his denials of Jesus. And failure, or the perception of failure, can seriously hinder any forward thinking. And finally, they point to Jeremiah, who had to deal with disappointment in ministry or work or life. They write, in 40 years of ministry, Jeremiah never saw a single positive response to the message God had entrusted to him. How long would any of us stay in such a situation? And if we have experienced disappointment with God, ourselves, or some other major piece of our lives, it may send us down this path of finishing poorly. There are several other factors that may contribute, like loneliness, feelings of inadequacy, the seduction of the spotlight, loss of purpose, feeling overwhelmed. Each one of these is hard enough to deal with on their own. So when several combine, we can tread on dangerous ground. And we control some of these factors, but others just pop up in our lives. So an awareness of them in our lives can help us begin to change paths. So those are some reasons why we might go down the path of finishing poorly. Next, we need to think about retirement. What do you think about retirement? And what is the purpose of retirement in your mind? One dictionary definition says retirement is the act of leaving one's job, career, or occupation permanently, usually because of age. A Google search of retirement landed on this definition. Retirement refers to the time of life when one chooses to permanently leave the workforce behind. Now, the Canadian government recognizes a retirement age of 65. And our culture's understanding of retirement then involves an age-influenced, permanent decision to leave work or career. And many retire for valid reasons, like high stress levels, declining physical or mental health, or a desire to pull back on a fast-paced life. And most people today seem quite familiar with the idea of retirement. But the bigger question is, what do we do once we retire? And the dominant view of our culture promotes retirement as a time to enjoy the fruits of our labor through leisure, travel, and recreation. Since the initial decision to retire involved departing permanently from the workforce, some conclude that retirement should not involve any work whatsoever. Yet is this the best thing for us? And more importantly for our purposes, will ceasing from all work help us to finish well? And the evidence does not point in this direction. Bob Buford interviewed around 60 people for his book on finishing well. And one was Dr. Kenneth Cooper, founder of the Cooper Clinic in Dallas. It focuses on preventative medicine and treatment. Buford asked Cooper what he observed in the lives of people who had retired and ceased from any work. Cooper responds, financially, physically, emotionally, most are not prepared for it. That's why there's a retirement syndrome that brings depression, anxieties, frustrations, suicide, all of the above. I've seen it happen in so many cases in my own practice. You have a really successful executive who has reached the top of his career, and then at age 65, he's forced into retirement. And in the meantime, he and his wife have led completely separate lives. To the extent that when they suddenly get back together at age 60 or 65, they have almost nothing in common. In many cases, I've seen they end up getting divorced. And at the end of his book, Buford devotes an entire appendix to the consequences of inertia. He writes, so what's the downside, what's the harm, the consequence of an inward-turning life of self-absorption in retirement? Ask your doctor, he writes. He or she will say something like, I can't quote the research, but it's uncanny how many of my patients go into decline almost immediately after they retire, and some die a couple years later. So maybe a retirement that aims to cease from all work and focus only on leisure is not the best for us. On top of all this, we need to consider a biblical and theological perspective on retirement. A word search for retire in the English Standard Version of the Bible revealed no results. For retirement wasn't really a concept in the ancient world for the vast majority of people, partially because of the much shorter lifespan of that area. However, even when people live beyond the life expectancy, we don't see retirement. Moses, for example, began his ministry at the age of 80. Paul worked in the gospel ministry until the moment of his execution in his 50s. Church history tells us John the Apostle is the only one of the 12 who died a natural death. Yet, he continued to minister and write into his later years. Theologically, we must consider whether a life totally devoted to leisure, travel, and recreation glorifies God. John Piper writes this, "Finishing life to the glory of Christ means finishing life in a way that makes Christ look glorious. It means living and dying in a way that shows Christ to be the all-satisfying treasure that he is. And this means that most of the suggestions the world offers for retirement are bad ideas. They call us to live in a way that would make this world look like our treasure. And when that happens, Jesus is belittled. So finishing life to the glory of Christ means resolutely resisting the typical American and Canadian dream of retirement. Certainly, there's nothing wrong with leisure or rest or travel or recreation. These can all contribute to our overall health. Yet if these become the main purpose of our retirement years, it raises the question of our greatest treasure. Do we treasure this life and this world above everything else, or might we use the second half or the last third of our lives in that which will matter for eternity? Piper soberly reminds us of the contrast. When you don't believe in the heavens to come and you are not content in the glory of Christ now, he writes, you will seek the kind of retirement the world seeks. But what a strange reward for a Christian to set his sights on. 20 years of leisure while living in the midst of the last days of infinite consequence for millions of people who need Christ. What a tragic way to finish the last mile before entering the presence of the King who finished his last mile so differently. Now we may retire from job or career, yet we must not retire from life and God's calling upon us. He has important works for us to accomplish throughout our lives. Psalm 71:18, which is on the front page of your bulletin, states, "So even to old age and gray hairs, O God, do not forsake me until I proclaim your might to another generation and your power to all those to come." So, we've seen some factors that may direct us down the path of finishing life poorly. We've seen we may need to revise our response of retirement to focus more on glorifying Christ in it. And with these in mind, we can now examine how to prepare to finish well. So first of all, it begins with awareness. Finishing well involves awareness in two key areas. And the first is the area of stage of life. What stage of life are we in? Some have attempted to study and summarize the different stages of life. And if you pick up one of the papers after, you'll see reference to those studies if you're interested in looking more into that. But I found the simplest way to look at this from the book written by Bob Buford. And he divides life into two stages, life one and life two. He writes, life one is what occurs before halftime, and life two comes afterward. Most people have a pretty good plan for life one, but few can see their way forward in life two. Life one has a multitude of clear role models and consists of fairly simple steps. You grow up somewhere, go to school somewhere, form your own family, and go to work somewhere. But then you retire. And do what? Life one, he writes, occurs up to and including ages 45 to 55. Life two is the second half of life, and he argues that many struggle to make this transition because of the lack of clear steps and the not-so-obvious path. Yet if we gain awareness of our stage of life, we begin to learn about these realities. We will learn that life two is not all about duplicating life one. And thinking clearly about this can transform life two from a gloomy, you retire and then you die outlook, to a purposeful, exciting, and productive time of life lived to God's glory. The second area of awareness concerns ourselves. We need to become aware of our core, our strengths, our passions that have been put there by God. David was a poet, songwriter, warrior, leader. So when he stopped doing these things, he got lost. He lay on his couch. He seems to have lost focus on his core strengths and passions. And Buford talks about finding the core of your personality, the immovable center of who you really are. It involves asking questions like, who did God make when he made me or you? What gifts and passions did he give me or you? Buford writes, you can change the venue in which you express yourself, but you can never change the core of who you are. Those who do well in life too have discovered their core. And each passing year, they focus on it more and more. They find renewed purpose by using their core to live lives of significance. So preparing to finish well involves awareness of our stage of life and awareness of our core. And then we need to refocus. Refocus our life purpose first on God and his will. Which sounds like a strange thing to say to a room full mostly of Christians. Don't we already focus our life purpose on God and his will? Maybe. But if you were to look back over your last 10 or 20 years of work or life, how much of it focused on what you wanted to do compared to what God wanted you to do? Some may have stayed aligned with God throughout their lives, but when we're young and strong, we can more easily slip into what we want to do without even consulting God. And we can also seemingly accomplish a lot without God because of our drive and our strength and our smarts. But around the year 50, a different perspective may begin to take shape. We slowly become more aware of our limitations. And then we may begin to look back on our lives and see God's hand more clearly in the things that we thought we accomplished on our own. To make a healthy transition from life one to life two, we need a more radical refocusing of our life's purpose onto him. In fact, we need to completely surrender our lives to him. And one of Jesus' many unique approaches to life concerned this aspect of surrender. He figured this out before he entered public ministry. He carried out his entire ministry in surrender to his Father's will. Mills and Perrow write, coming before his Father continually with a listening, sensitive, responsive heart was the environment in which Christ walked in the works prepared for him from the foundation of the world. So preparing to finish well involves this change in focus from success and accumulation to surrender and giving. And this leads us to the other area where our life purpose may need to refocus. And this is refocusing our life purpose onto others. Much of the first half of our lives naturally focuses on ourselves and our families. We need to get educated or trained so that we can go into a field. We need to gain credentials and experience necessary to carry out our calling. We need to learn about how to be married, how to be parents. Yet at some point, questions of significance begin to arise. And we ask, why are we doing what we're doing? Some discover loneliness at the top, the emptiness of accumulation and luxury. And sadly, many married couples find themselves strangers when they arrive at their empty nest. Though they were successful in career and in raising kids, they miss the critical work of maintaining their marriage. Mills and Perel write, David appeared to be so preoccupied with building his own kingdom that he seemed unaware of the deep pain, anger, and bitterness that developed in his own son's heart because of a lack of relationship with his father. Perhaps in his eyes, they write, building a kingdom was easier than loving one wife and caring for his children as a godly father. Jesus summarized the law and the prophets like this in Matthew 22, 37 to 40. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And many neighbors, others around us, could benefit from our purposeful investment in their lives. Whether they be family or extended family, friends or community, or people in the far corners of the earth. So we need to pair our core with God's purpose. And then, with His direction and will, we refocus our life purpose onto the others that He leads to us. So, preparing to finish well requires awareness. We need to gain awareness of our stage of life and our core. And preparing to finish well involves refocusing. We need to refocus our life purpose more fully onto God and onto helping others. And all this requires a willingness to keep going and growing in life too. For we enter uncharted ground. There is no one size fits all. God has given each of us unique gifts and experiences. Yet thankfully, some, many who are part of this congregation, have gone before us and are finishing well. And I pray that wherever you're at in life today, you can take something from this. If you are younger, please don't kill yourself working towards a retirement of leisure that may never come, at the expense, especially, of your marriage or relationships with your kids. Work in tandem on your career and on your relationship with God and with one another in your family. And if you're nearing halftime, you can begin to think about God's gifting and calling upon your life and what He has next for you in your life. And if you're already coasting, it's not too late to get back on with what God has for you. He can still use you for His good and His eternal purposes. And if you're in your 50s and beyond, seek God's direction, if you don't already know it, to discover your core, and then ask Him to bring people and resources into your life that will guide you to use your core to help others that He brings into your life. And hopefully, by God's grace, more of us can finish well to the glory of God. Let us pray together. Oh God, as we come to You today, we are reminded of Your call on our lives. And this call does not only apply during our working life. It applies through all of our lives. In every stage, in every phase, your call for us to follow you and by your strength to do what you've prepared for us to do remains. And so for every person here today or every person watching online, I pray that wherever they are at, you will encourage them to either get back up off the couch and rejoin what you're calling them to do, or to keep going in what they're already doing. And Lord, help us to grow as a people who are listening to you more, who are surrendering all of our lives to you, so that they can be used for your glory and for the benefit of others. And thank you, Lord Jesus, for finishing well and showing us the way so that we could have life and join you in this eternal journey. We pray in your name. Amen.